Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 16th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, it's proof week, even though it's early in the month. We got our cruise coming up, so we want to get the magazine done early, and it's proof week, and we all know what that means. Scott's ready to lose some money.
Yeah, you know, I was telling you, last night I was on Short Stack Radio, and I was telling them the busiest week every month for Chris and I at Ante Up is deadline week.
Yeah.
Only eclipsed by the 3 weeks of the year that are leading up to the cruise, where I'm running around with a chicken with the head cut off. So some ass clown went out and scheduled both of those for the same week this week.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder who that was.
Don't know who he is, but I'm going to fire him. So yeah, what a crazy week. And wouldn't you know it, the one time that I actually do well in a tournament while I'm proofing the pages is in the middle of this hellstorm that I'm in.
Yeah, not so busy that Scott can't go play poker. Even though he's going to be playing poker all week long next week with not a care in the world. No, he's got plenty of time. Just know that there's going to be plenty of typos and cuss words in the magazine this issue, because Scott apparently still can find time to play poker while he's proofing our pages.
Well, you know, hey, here's the thing. We give a lot to our readers, and I want to give a lot back to the poker economy, too. So
yeah,
the more I play poker, the more the poker economy does better. So.
Right.
All right, but here's the thing. Yeah, so I went, and normally we don't proof on Tuesday night. So, you know, I talked about before, you know, I go on these nights and the tournament's either too big or whatever, I can't play, so I play cash and get screwed. So this night it was a $70, what they call a super stack blitz tournament. All right?
Wow.
So essentially you get 30,000 units after the dealer add-on and all that stuff.
And blinds are 1 in 2,000?
But yeah, essentially blinds go up every 15 minutes, and it's not a terrific structure. So what's great about this tournament is that it appeals to the, I don't want to be critical here, but the people that don't peel back the layers of the onion, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we get this question a lot. We have people call in, or I run into them in the poker room, so they're like, gosh, Scott, you got to tell poker room managers, give us more chips. We want more chips. And here's the thing, it doesn't matter how many chips you're given. If the structure changes in lockstep with it, it's the same tournament.
Yeah, exactly. It's more time and that you want, more time.
It has little to do with the number of units. It's the whole package that you got to consider. So here's an example of a tournament, and they purposely do it. It's on a slow night, so I mean, I'm not criticizing them. They know exactly what they're doing. We'll give people a lot of chips, and we'll change the structure so it doesn't last any longer than a normal one. But people will be all excited. Woo, I get 30,000 units. So, in general, the field is a little softer, and I'm not saying this just based off my first experience, but I talked to the final table. That's right. I made it to the final table, by the way.
Wow.
And most of them play it every week, too, and they confirm the same thing I said. So, but lots of interesting things came out of this tournament that I want to talk about. First of all, as I mentioned, made the final table. We ended up chopping it four ways at the end. It's like 1:20 in the morning. I justified chopping with what I like to call the Matlock defense.
You let the old people fell asleep watching their favorite show on the TV, and you just took their blinds?
Exactly. Bedtime for me is 10 p.m., and it was 1:20, and I had to get some sleep. So when somebody mentioned chop, even though I really did think I was in the driver's seat on this thing and probably could have won the whole thing, I'm like, you know what? If you guys all want to chop, I'll take my 4X profit here and go home and get 2 hours of sleep.
I don't disagree with that.
Sometimes you got to. Sometimes it's a necessity of the situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with 140, so because that's what you're going to give me, right, for splitting it, doing it on Antiope's time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to check the contract. the fact that I made it to the final table, beyond the fact that it's surprising when I ever make a final table, was even more impressive because on the second hand of the tournament, I was reminded how much I'm scared of monsters, Chris. I don't care if it's Bigfoot, Yeti, Dracula, Succubus, Cornucopia, whatever that monster is we talked about last week. I am completely scared of him now. Because here's what happened. Second hand of the tournament, I'm in the small blind. I, quote, wake up with pocket aces. It had been raised, and we had two callers, so it gets to me. So, of course, I re-raise fairly substantial. But here's the problem with these big stack tournaments, is people get silly with their chips, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I've got 30,000. I'm going to raise to 7,000. You know, 400x. Of course, I didn't make that. I made a standard what I thought was a good raise for it, right? Got two callers. Flop comes queen, queen, queen. immediately, I'm like, wow, this can't get much better for me, right? So I bet out, call. Obviously, the next two cards don't really matter. Unless it's an ace, of course. So the next round, I bet out, lose one player, another guy calls. So at this point, I'm like, can I really be up against King King and Jack Jack here? I mean, who else is going to be calling this? But again, I was thinking in my mind, this tournament attracts players that aren't as skilled. So I wasn't too scared, right? So the river, I didn't get my ace. So at this point, I bet 5,000. At this point, the pot justified that. The guy min raises me to 10,000. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. How could this happen? Threw in the 5,000. I said, you got the queen? Yes, sir, I do. He showed the queen. I'm like, nice hand.
Man.
Boom. Half my stack gone in a second.
God. Doesn't that suck? I know. How does that happen?
Queen 10 he played. Who plays queen 10? For a raise and a re-raise?
Man. Well, he had 30,000 chips, you know?
Well, yeah, and you know what? I got that. I looked at it. I'm like, geez, I just lost half my stack. I'm like, thank gosh, it's a super stack here. You know, I still got some play. But every time we're going to say, can't be scared of the monsters on the bed, I'm going to remind everyone, yes, be very, very scared.
So can you remind me one more time now how the betting went pre-flop?
Pre-flop, the initial raiser who had ace-king, I believe he said, he didn't show, raised 3 or 4x.
Okay.
The quad monster called. And there might have been another caller before it got to me in the small blind, and then I raised three or four times that.
Wow. I probably would have raised more, but yeah. Wow. I mean, it doesn't justify the queen 10 coming along. I'm thinking if you made it 3 or 4X and you got two callers calling 4X, I would think that, yeah, I might make it more than just 3X the original bet.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was, but my mindset was not getting silly with the chips because you have a lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you don't get silly with the chips, everybody else gets silly with the chips, so they don't respect your raise. And that's exactly what happened here.
Man, that's just crazy.
But, I mean, I guess the pat on the back I gave myself is I didn't go broke with this hand.
Yeah, I know. And on top of it, you made the final table, so you lost half your stack and still outplayed these people. Pretty good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in that tournament would have thought that their aces were good there and just shoved it. And, you know, I had little antennas on the back of my neck. all right, but here's the other thing. This was of all times that I've been proofing the magazine while playing poker, I've never had this happen. You know, I'm reading our great columnist, our strategy columnist, who do just a phenomenal job with the magazine, right? And I'm proofing them, and every time I finish the column, I look up and I realize people are doing what these columnists are talking about.
Yeah.
So, for example, Antonio Pinzari, this in this coming issue, has a great column about hand rank. You know, he's talking about the difference between pair over pair, you know, big cards versus little cards, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And when we got close to the final table, one of the guys that ended up making the chop with me was in a situation where he was trying to steal a pot, short stack, shoved over the top of him, and they sat there forever and decided to call with the, I believe, 8-4 offsuit. Now, he had a monster chip stack, right?
Yeah.
So he justified it based on the fact that he thought that even though he didn't have a strong hand, that the opponent probably didn't have a pair either and had two random cards as well, too. So as long as he paired his card, he would win.
Yeah.
Giantonio, you know, very elegantly pays, shows that that's not 50-50, but, you know,
right,
much closer than I think people think. So, of course, when he tabled his cards, everybody's like, how could you call that? And I was sitting there, I'm like, well, I would have called that. And, of course, he turned trips with it. Justified, but I thought that was interesting, right? So then I'm reading Mike Wolff's strategy column. And a very good one, too, I think. He's talking about, you know, don't sit at the table and talk strategy. There's lots of reasons. One, you're educating people. You don't want to educate people when you're at the table trying to take money from them.
Right.
And two, you're kind of like a window to how you play, and everybody's going to sit there and listen and know how to play back at you, right?
Exactly.
So, of course, I had Kathy Chattybox sit down in the one seat, or I was sitting in the two seat, and the entire time he's monotone, his little detailing every play he makes out loud to the entire table after he folds. I had this. This is why I played it this way. It was amazing. All I can think is this guy didn't get hugged by his mom enough growing up and just needed some validation there.
Well, what do you want? His mom named him Kathy. We were going to break you of that habit of saying Kathy when you mean a guy, too. I mean, I'm thinking it's a woman sitting next to you, and then you're like, yeah, so he did this
I
and he did
this
that.
I sat down, Chatty Kathy.
Yeah, Chatty Charlie, Chatty anything would be better than Chatty Kathy.
Charlie. There's no basis in the great 80s movie for Chatty Charlie. It's Chatty Kathy. But yeah, I mean, this guy, I don't think he... I mean, obviously, I think he was just trying to get attention, so he succeeded in what he was trying to do, but I don't think he realized what he was doing, is that he was just telling everybody how he played, and I don't think I ever really used against him. He ended up going out the final table before the money, but yeah, shut up at the table.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, is the point he made, too, is something about, you know, if you're telling these people what they're doing wrong or what you're doing right, you're letting them know that you're a better player than they are, and they may also avoid you. You know what I mean? You're just totally educating them on all angles, and it's just not the right thing to do.
I mean, every once in a while, you'll turn to the person next to you and say, blah, 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 you know, just because you feel like talking. But, I mean, talk to the entire table, every hand, every single hand. It was just annoying. And then Jonathan Little had another great column, as always, talking about how you have to think ahead in the hand and anticipate where you're going to be. And this is why I'm in awe of Jonathan. He's just able to do this kind of stuff that I'm just not to that level yet, right?
Right.
I read this after this happened to me, but I went back and thought about it because I remember finding this myself in the situation. Fairly soon after I got crushed with my aces, I opened a pot from under the gun plus two or something with ace-jack offsuit, right? Got a collar on the button. Flop came down with an ace. I bet out, and a significant raise, re-raise back to me. And I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I got top pair, pretty good kicker, but if he's got ace-king, ace-queen, I'm crushed. If he's got a set, I'm crushed. He's got all kinds of things that I could have him crushed. And I didn't want to be scared, but also I'm out of position, and obviously I just took a big hit in my chips, and I didn't know what to do, so when I don't know what to do, I fold. I figure that's always the better option. But when I'm reading Jonathan's column, I'm like, I went into that hand without a plan.
Yeah.
I just, my plan was to raise open from early position and hope everybody folds, or flop a monster. I didn't know what to do if somebody in better position called, and I got a flop that I kind of liked, and he raised me. I didn't know what to do.
I think my favorite part of that story was early on when you said, that's why, you know, Jonathan Little is so good, and I'm not at that level yet. I love how you said yet. Like, you're going to be at Jonathan Little's... You can live to be 300, and I don't know if you'll ever be at Jonathan Little's level, so that's pretty funny.
There are amazing advances in scientific discovery going on every day.
Remember that TV show, Amazing Discoveries, where they had all these stupid little gadgets that they sold that were all patent-pending and everything? I love that show.
I am holding out a tremendous amount of hope that some scientist is going to be able to develop a Jonathan Little pill that can take some way to transform me.
And it would be a little pill, too. It'd be small.
I wasn't going to go there. All right, now here's my favorite story, then we'll move on to the rest of the show. All right, so we get to the first break, right? And, of course, as normal, I'm proofing, not paying a lick of attention. Chatty Charlie.
Yes.
Mentions, hey, it's a break. You're calling up the green, right? He's talking to the dealer, right? And the dealer's like, yeah, yeah, right. Okay, all right, great. So the Chatty Charlie gets up. I stay at the table because I'm improving now, right? I put out my chips. It does a color up. I win. Yay! Yay me! And so they got all the chips bought up. And so the dealer calls over to Floor. Hey, Floor, I need a rack for the color up. And Floor comes over and is like, color up? There's no color up right now. You need all those quarters for Annie's.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, man, you're right. And then there's like this silence. What do I do? So I'm going to ask you right now. I guess in the end it seemed to be a simple solution, but at the time I was kind of with him. I'm like, yeah, dude, what do you do?
Well, everyone who cashed in their greens gets their blacks. So you just give them back the blacks and they give them back the greens. It doesn't have to be how many. You can make change whenever you want, but you can give a certain amount of them stacks of greens back. And then I guess whoever gained them, if you can't remember how many they had when you're dealing it out because it's not still in front of you, then you just give them more greens, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's ended up what happened is they ended up saying, hey, just sell greens back to everyone.
Yeah.
So if I got lucky, I got a bonus quarter out of it because they didn't...
But then did you color up again and win again? That's the thing.
No, that's the thing. The next time we colored up, I lost.
Oh.
I got a deuce and a tray. I lost. That's how I was running.
Oh, my God.
I win races that don't exist, and I lose the ones that do. But I felt so bad for this dealer, because then Chatty Charlie comes back, and he's like, hey, I thought we were calling it up. He's like, yeah, I thought so, too.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chatty Charlie Cathy.
And the dealer was super nice to him, and eventually I'm like, you know what, I wasn't going to say anything, dealer, but yeah, I'm blaming him, too.
Exactly.
Oh my God. All the time I play poker, I've never seen an accidental color-up.
The last time I was in a color-up, it was that when I kept a green by accident, and I lost it. So I lost three different ways in that one.
And then to compound this issue, when we got down to the final table, we had a bunch of pink 500s on the table.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, all the antes were 1,000 or more, so there's no reason for people to be using these. Folks, I'm going to say right now, some of you are just starting out in this game. So I'm not being critical. I was there with you before. When you are betting, always bet with the biggest unit you can that does not require change. I know you love to have those big stacks of pink that you want to push in and make the dealer break down and count every time it counts the antes. It just slows the game down incredibly, right?
Yeah.
So it turns out that they forgot to do the color up.
Oh, my God.
After they accidentally did the cover up for the first time. So they didn't get them off the table. So... I was trying to be, I tried not to be the table sheriff here, but eventually I got tired of this because, you know, it was getting late. I was missing Matlock, right? So finally I looked over into the, and I was a short stack for a while, of course, you know, big surprise. And I'm like, hey guys, did one of you chip leaders want to start buying up the pink? I'd be happy to do it, but I'm just going to keep putting them back in the pot because I'm short stack. But one of you guys can just buy them up and I'm like, you know, it just speeds up the game. And people looked at me like I was, like, from Planet of the Apes. What do you mean? Oh, and then finally one would go, oh, I guess I could buy them up and just put them off to the side, right? I'm like, well, no, I mean, they're not out of play. You just have a lot of chips, so you don't need to use them. Just buy them up so no one else is using them. Oh, yeah, okay, great. So the dealer helped me out, too. We eventually got them almost all colored up by this one guy, right?
Right.
And then people start betting with all their yellow 1,000s when it's... 15,000, 30,000. I'm like, no! The Annie's 5,000 to put five yellows in. I'm like, just put one orange in! Do you not understand what I'm talking about?
Man. My dad's the same way. He will not let go of the high denomination chips ever. He'll just sit there and count down as much as he can to not have to use. In our game, it's the blacks. You know, he doesn't want to use the blacks. I'm like, come on. You still have the same one. Oh, I like the blacks, though. Whatever. I think we got back to this a long time ago when I was, for the old, you know, the old-time listeners, back when I was had that really, really first big winning cash session of my life at Foxwoods, and the guy didn't want to give up his I think it was his $100 chips or something, and it was just, it was a huge tell on the guy that if he used them, and then he had a really big hand.
He thought he was going to get it back.
Yeah, and that was exactly. So that's a tell. People don't realize it, but that's a tell. If you don't want to give them up all week long, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're willing to throw them in there, you must have a great hand.
And I'll finish this, and we'll move on to the rest of the show by saying it seems incredibly illogical to me, because there is some psychology involved, particularly in a low-level tournament like this. I mean, it's not going to work at the $25,000 Players Championship, right?
Right.
But having more chips in front of you is psychological. When you do all in and they look over and you've got mounds and mounds of high society, they think you have more than you really do if you have the same amount of chips all in high denominations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's almost to your benefit to buy up all the small chips and make yourself look big and not bet with a ball and put out the highest denomination chip. So,
kind of like when Scott bets 149 when we're playing online, because he likes to see all those chips stacked up in front of him, makes it look like more than it is.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, congrats on the final table, buddy.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Got a little. Don't worry. You're going to get more than your share of that.
Okay.
The cruises.
Can't wait. Sure. Can't wait. Well, since your story ran long, we'll go into the hotline now. 813-448-1120. Our silent partner, Dan, from Atlantic City, called in with an interesting situation.
Hey, guys. It's Dan from Atlantic City up in Jersey, the silent majority owner of the magazine. Anyway, guys, hey, I was curious to get your opinion on the latest program of Epic Poker. The event where Parag Jaka went all in with the aces, Vanessa Russo called with the queen, and then Joe Tihan goes over the top of Vanessa with the 2-4 offsuit, knowing that Jaka's already all in. I know Vanessa's a friend of the show, curious on her account. That looks really fishy to me. There's absolutely nothing for Tihan to win. Jaka's all in. He has 2-4 offsuit. It really looks like Tihan might have a piece of Jaka, trying to get Russo to fold a hand that can beat Jaka, and he's giving him some protection. So I was curious if you guys saw that and your opinion on that.
Now, I hear what he's saying. Now, it could look like that. It could look like Tihan's got a piece of Jaka and he's giving him protection. But it also could look like he thinks Jaka's going all in, because Jaka's pretty loose. You have to admit he's one of those players that you could run into with any two cards at any time, regardless of him being all in. And it could be Ace King, and as we talked about earlier with Penzari's column, and Deuce Four suited is not that much of a dog to Ace King.
Nope.
When you've got dead money in there from Vanessa Russo, who he knows only called, so she can't be that strong. Likely, maybe you got a tell on her or a read or something. So I don't see this as 100%, hey, he's got protection of him, this is suspicious, this is fishy. Now, I could go that way, but I certainly am not going to have the floor call somebody overside and say, let's look at the tape. And no, this is clearly, for us, Jaka can have any two cards, and Deuce Four can easily outrace Ace King or Ace Queen or whatever. And then even like the guy in your tournament could make trips or something. We never know. So with dead money in the middle, I really don't think that this was I have a piece of this guy and I'm giving him protection collusion kind of thing.
Yeah, and I, when I heard this call, I thought of last week's show, I believe it was, when we had Sam on, and talking about, how hard it is to really, from a floor standpoint, figure out whether somebody's chip dumping because of how people play these days.
Yeah.
People are very aggressive, 4-betting, 5-betting, with all kinds of wide range of hands. And obviously, this is a hand in a vacuum here, so it's a little different. But
that hurts, I've had that happen to me. You reach down to the rug to grab something, and the vacuum hits you, and you turn hand in a vacuum.
Absolutely.
That sucks, man.
Terrible.
That's especially when you're using a Dyson.
Nerf vacuum. So. but I guess my point is people play a lot of different things. And, you read a lot of strategy books, and the more you read, the more you see the genius in people's play and stuff that doesn't seem like it makes sense on the surface.
Yeah, I mean, that's dead money in the middle if he's positive she'll fold. That's dead money. Now you get to go heads up with somebody when you're getting, whatever it is, 3-1 your money, whatever. Right. So I just feel like he's got some legitimate reasons for doing that, so I can't automatically call foul there. And I wish I knew what happened in the hand. I think that Tehan did well in one of those recently, so I don't know what happened, but I didn't see the show. I don't really watch Epic Poker on TV that much. I mean, I think I've seen it once or twice, but
well, just wait for the new season.
Very funny.
All right, well, hey Dan, we always appreciate when you call on the hotline, and let me know when we get our next check there from Antiup headquarters.
He gets paid already, so we don't have to give him any swag.
That's right. Yeah, he's already swagged up this year. But everybody else, call our hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you something great, like a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games and leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts. In the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Well, Drew Cohan wrote in, and this is our mailbag segment. He says, hey, have you guys seen the new Zoom feature at PokerStars? It's pretty cool and very addictive. Would love for you guys to try it out and talk about it on the show. So Scott did, actually.
Well, yeah. I immediately responded to him. Hey, do they do this for play money? Because if not, thanks.
Exactly.
I drove back, oh, I don't know. I'm like, oh, thanks. But no, I signed on to it last night, and I didn't play, but they had a big to-do about it, on the little welcome screen, right? So I clicked over and read about it. Perhaps I'm missing something, but it sounds almost exactly like Rush Poker on that poker site not affiliated with Antiup and not affiliated with proper financial procedures.
Right.
Which is awesome.
But you didn't try it out? You just read about it?
No, I just read about it. Oh, okay. Hey, I don't have time to play poker this week. But, I think it's awesome that they have something very similar to that. What sucks is we can't play on the site anymore now.
Yeah.
Because I always wanted to play Rush, but obviously I didn't bring myself to do it because, of obvious reasons. And so now it's available on a site that I really like and a site that we can't play on, at least in terms of real money.
Right. You can't do it in America, but you can play it everywhere else. We have listeners all over the country, so there are, I mean, all over the world, so there are some people who can play it. So it sounds like it's the same thing, and if we ever somehow get PokerStars back in this country, I'm sure I'll give that a shot, because I'm the same as you. I did want to try the Rush Poker, but refused to, so.
And I guess real quickly, we should mention what we mean by Rush. As soon as you fold, you are whisked to another table, and you get an immediate hand.
Right, with your same stack and everything, same situation, same position.
So it doesn't do any good to get any tells on the people you're playing against, because as soon as you fold, you're going to be a whole new set of opponents.
Right, exactly.
Until I guess you get down to the final table, then you're probably catching up to people at that point. But, great idea.
And if you're playing for cash games, it means nothing.
Very true. All right, Drew, we appreciate you sending your question in the mailbag. Everybody else, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we may, too, give you something great. Like, we're going to give Drew today a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Very cool. Okay, our call to floor this week comes from Gary Rawson via email. He says he was playing a 1-2 no-limit hold'em table at a casino with one of his friends who was a little drunk and had been arguing with another player at the table.
Never happens.
In a later hand, my friend raises and gets re-raised. My friend goes into the tank. Not even 30 seconds later, the player who had been arguing with him calls for a clock. That player wasn't in the hand and said he was doing it out of spite for what happened earlier. The floor came over and gave my friend 30 seconds to act on his hand. In the middle of the time, I asked the floor whether a player out of the hand can call the clock like that, especially when it is obvious he did it out of spite. The floor told me anyone but the aggressor can call the clock on anyone. The floor said the aggressor can't put additional pressure on a player besides his bet. Was this ruling right? What's to stop teams of players from using this tactic against opponents?
I got some opinions too, as usual. This is going to be a fun one to talk about. But here's the official response from our great poker room manager, Jody Russell. It says, in a tournament, any player at the table can call for a clock after a, quote, reasonable amount of time has elapsed, including the aggressor. In a cash game, it isn't customary to be allowed to call a clock on a player, especially in no limit.
It is a dealer's job to make sure the action is moving at a pace that is consistent with the size of the game and the size of the bet a player is facing at the moment. The bigger the game or the bigger the bet, the more time that should be allowed before the dealer prompts the player. That said, there are a lot of rooms that do have this rule in place in their cash games. The rule of the house is that anyone can call the clock except the aggressor. That's the rule. I would definitely ask the lead shift manager and the room manager in that room just to be certain.
That sounds about exactly what you expect to hear. I mean, of course, there's a lot of leeway and discretion in there because of how, you know, what's deemed a big game to one person might not be deemed to another and that kind of thing, but pretty much spot on with what I thought. When I read the initial part and he had said that the guy said the aggressor can't, I thought that was baloney. I've seen millions of times where...
Yeah, it's almost always the aggressor.
Yeah, it's always because he's like, let's go, let's move it on. You know, he's the person who wants to see it end or use that to his own thing where he might think, oh, if I say it, the guy will think I don't want him to call and then he'll call. So, yeah, no, that's not true.
But I want to talk about the spite thing a little bit because, you know, this is why... These are the things that I hate about poker. It attracts these people that's like, oh, you mess with me, I'm going to mess with you. Clock! And, you know, I think we talked about this in a couple shows ago. Once somebody does this, then all of a sudden, everybody at the poker table becomes a freaking lemon. Lemming. Or a lemon, I guess, too.
You could be a lemon, too, but...
A lemon-scented lemming.
That's a sour lemming.
And they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to call clock on him next time. Oh, I'm going to call clock. Next thing you know, everybody's calling clock. And it's ridiculous. So, you know, I guess for me, I think I don't see... Probably I can count on two hands the number of times I've been in a game where somebody's called a clock. My favorite, of course, is when you get the clock called on you on the cruise.
In my own cruise.
So it's something to be used judiciously, just like, you know, asking to see a player's hand. So I would think if I'm playing in a decently run room, the floor would come over and say, all right, guys, here's our rules for it, and no more calling the clock unless it's an absolute necessity or something.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried too much about everybody doing it. Because he's talking about what's to stop teams and players from using this tactic against opponents, which I think is a legitimate question, but I think what's to stop it is the fact that you've got a well-run room going. And eventually the floor is going to get sick of being called over to call the clock every single hand and put a stop to it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that floors go weeks, maybe even months without having to call a clock on people in a regular room. So for them to get it more than once or twice in one tournament and then they start seeing the same characters or whatever, they're going to put an end to it. So I would imagine that's a pretty obvious thing they're going to do.
You know, if you're trying to spite someone, too, I'm not going to call clock. I'm going to order, like, Limburger cheese on my hamburger or something. There's lots of other ways to get under people's skin that are completely legal.
Yeah, be really deliberate and, you know, hide your cards. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to really tick somebody off.
Put a Swiss Army knife on top of your cards. That's one of my other favorite Christmas in the story. Couldn't see your cards over that Swiss Army knife yet.
She had, like, 15 things protecting her cards. I loved it. I felt it her like 2 out of 4 hands in a row. That was so awesome.
You're so mean.
I know. But hey, you know, that was a great trip. Fassel told me I couldn't win with class and I couldn't lose with class and we had a big argument. That was a great trip, man.
Juarez, yeah.
We learned Juarez. That was a great trip. I had my chip stolen.
Yep.
And the guy told me I was SOL. That was great, man. What a trip that was.
Yeah, we're probably not going to top that trip. All right, Gary, we appreciate you sending your call the floor question to us, and we are going to be happy to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. Everybody else can pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com or email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and win some.
Right now, I am going to assure that a ton of people will come out for the upcoming meetups you're hoping to have, because I'm not going to be at them. So once they hear there's no chance of me being at these meetups, the poker rooms better put on some extra staff, because they're going to flood this place. Save the dates. Scott's looking to do an Ante Up meetup in Atlantic City on April 2nd or 3rd, Minneapolis on May 27th, Chicago on May 29th, and Vegas the week of the 25th. Now, I will be there for the Vegas one.
We'll be there for the Vegas.
That's no secret. But that's still down the road. That's still a quite a ways down the road. That's 3 months away at least. So, you know, hey, as soon as it gets a little bit closer, and Scott knows exactly where he's going to be and when, we'll let you know. But just remember that if you live in that area around that time, he's going to be there, and I won't. So you'll enjoy yourselves. You can all get drunk. I won't be judgmental. I'll be back home working on the magazine like I always am. Scott will be out there getting drunk and playing blackjack to make up for his losses. So enjoy yourselves. Have fun with him.
You gotta do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah.
Okay, as we mentioned on last week's show, Annie Up has lost a great friend in John Lanier. And we finally have details on the benefit tournament that's going to be held in his name. It will be an $80 buy-in tournament to benefit prostate cancer awareness. It will be held at 2 p.m. on April 20th at Lucky's Card Room at Tampa Greyhound Track. Chris and I are both will be playing. Annie Up's donating $300 worth of raffle prizes to make it an even better event. We would be honored if most of you in this area can come out and show your support for John and help us raise money for prostate cancer awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. And be sure to check out our 2012 Poker Cruise schedule one last time, AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. We still have two more cruises, even though that you know we're going on one this week. August 27th out of Port Canaveral. There are some giveaways for that one, too. I think the Suncoast in Las Vegas is doing some.
Yep.
And then
soon.
Yep, and November 10th out of Baltimore. So don't forget, still two more cruises at least this year.
Yep, and I actually booked somebody yesterday for the Tampa cruise. Talk about waiting to the last minute. Even Leonardo DiCaprio is already on the ship.
And we have over 110 people on this one. So for a nice little cruise and nice you know crowd that we're going to get there. So pretty excited.
Yeah. And we have more than 30 people booked for both of us, the other two already well in advance.
Yeah, terrific.
We're doing a good cruise schedule this year.
Off to a good start. Okay, let's see what news is coming off the Annie Up News Desk.
A bill to regulate online poker in Iowa has passed the state Senate this week, but faces long odds for approval in the state's House. And meanwhile, a bill to do the same thing in Mississippi has stalled in that state's legislature.
So, you know, you're the political journalist of the two of us. Let me ask you, let's say the House shoots it down in Iowa. Is it dead?
Yes.
It is, no matter what. It can't go, like, the governor can't say, hey, I want to do this.
Nope. Has to pass both houses.
Has to pass them no matter what.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're trying up there. At least they're trying.
Yeah. So call your House rep if you live in Iowa.
Yeah, exactly.
Make sure that doesn't happen.
Exactly. Okay. Landry's, the owner of the Golden Nugget brand of casinos, has bought the Isle Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, and plans a multi-million dollar renovation, including the poker room. And we were at that poker room.
Yeah.
And that was years ago, and it was pretty small. And the manager at the time, Steve, said, you know, hey, they got plans for a room for us. And he kept saying it, and they kept saying, yeah, it's right around the corner, right around the corner. And they never, ever did it. And I think it's going to take something like the Golden Nugget, who, you know, they cherish poker as a family, I think. So I think it might take something like this to actually get that poker room done. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do there.
Yeah, I think they're looking 6 to 8 months now, maybe. So we'll be excited by the end of the year. All right, and finally, a man was dragged out of a Pennsylvania poker room by security after he became abusive with staff and security guards after losing a hand he thought he should have won. Shockingly, officers detected a strong odor of alcohol in the player's breath.
And I heard the thing that triggered it was they called a clock on the guy.
Probably, yes.
Oh man,
you know, I never like to see this kind of stuff in the poker room because it just, you know, they're dragging people past the slot machines. It just, you know, doesn't make poker look very good. But the car crash part of me in me would love to see this happen sometime.
Well, what cracks me up though is that it actually made our news desk. I envisioned this happening like 6 times a day at casino. I can't believe that this is like the first time it's actually like being reported and has a news story attached to it. I mean, I thought for sure this happens like on the hour in Atlantic City or something. You know, I mean, I had no idea. This is hilarious to me that this is actually making the news desk. How is this news? It's old to me. I don't know, but
I guess that's true. I guess it was in the telling of the story, which I probably didn't tell as well as the.
You're the kind of guy that falls for the salesman pitch when you go to the store and they tell you, "Oh yeah, spend another $80 on this wash machine because it saves water being front loaded rather than top loaded." Right? You're that type of guy, right? There's a little inside joke there. All right, we have a brand new O'Malley's Move to finish up this week. Let's hear the first part. Remind us what's going on.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $2-$5 no-limit hold'em cash game. The table we're at is a full table, but there are three people away from the table, so we're playing six-handed. We got sucked out on earlier when our flopped nut flush got rivered by a full house and we've lost over half of our starting stack. We now sit at 175 when this hand begins. The under-the-gun player, who is the one that sucked out on us earlier, makes it $20 to go, the standard raise. He is a laggy and will play any two cards from any position. The two players in between us fold, and we look down at ace of clubs, king of clubs on the button. A proper raise here would be to $60, a third of our stack, and judging by the body language of the rest of the players in the hand, we're going to be heads up. So we just make the call, and the blinds fold. The pot is nearing $50 as the flop comes down, ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, five of clubs. The under-the-gun player checks to us, and we make a bet of about $35. We only have 120 left, and he's got us covered. Our opponent wastes no time in check-raising enough to put us all in. And it's decision time. Are we ahead here?
Alright, boy, I hate losing aggressive players. Can I say that?
Hey, are there any players you like?
No, no.
Oh, okay, so you just hate everybody at the table.
Pretty much hate everybody.
Alright.
I think you probably hate more than I do, but,
I don't know, you're the one who always says it.
Yeah. Alright, so, against a loose aggressive player, I don't think you ever know whether you're ahead unless you have the absolute nuts.
Right.
Is it the nuts or mortal nuts?
I would just say nuts.
We always have this argument. Is it mortal nuts or immortal nuts?
It's just nuts.
All right, just nuts.
Nuts. There's no variation of nuts. You have the nuts, you have the nuts. you don't have to put the descriptor. You know, it's a nuts. That's it.
Oh, man. All right, well, all that being said, I really like the spot we're in here. I'm going to guesstimate we're about 50-50 to be ahead right now. And if we're wrong, we have flush and other outs. We have, this is kind of the spot that I would think you want to be in against a lag. So I'm willing to gamble here.
You know what's funny is I think no matter what, you're always 50-50. Either you're ahead or you're
not.
Or
you're behind.
I mean, you could have the same hand, so maybe it's 49-49 at 0.5. But, I mean, it's always 50-50, isn't it? Either you're ahead or you're not.
Yeah.
All right, well, since it's a loose aggressive player, I'm going to spin the wheel of mayhem, and I'm going to call. You know, he's loose aggressive, and we have top. I can't fold. I mean, you could put him on any hands. Sure, it could be 8-5 or ace-8 or something, but I can't fold. I'm sorry. No matter what you tell me, I'm probably calling here, so I can't do it. All right, so let's see what happens, and then we'll come back with our final thought.
Hello again. This was a tough one. Not only do we have no range for this opponent, we have no idea if he wants a call or not. We might be ahead, but ultimately, we might be behind as well. This confusion gets the better of us, and in a moment of outcounting, we make the call, perhaps a bit hastily. Our opponent turns over ace of hearts, five of hearts, for a flopped two pair, and after blanks on the turn and river, we have to rebuy. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley reminding you to come play with us on PokerStars in Pace on every day ending in a 6 at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. I'll see you on the felt.
Well, did I mention I hate playing against lags?
Yeah.
You know, this is clearly the advantage of being a loose aggressive player. You make it very difficult for opponents to put you on hands or even ranges of hands. And by doing that, you induce action with hands like our good friend O'Malley had here against hands that we happen to wake up with here. All that being said, I think there are tremendous downsides to being a lag, too, so I don't think it's a slam dunk way to play. But obviously, this is, if you're that type of player, these are the situations you like to get into. You're splashing around, you're in a lot of pots, people don't know what you have, and then you end up having a hand, and they have a piece, too, and boom, you felt them.
Yeah, and like you alluded to, it's easy to pick one hand that hits the lag this hard and causes us to lose and look foolish and when trying to analyze it. But really, I think our decisions and our thoughts were sound, and I wouldn't have played it any differently. I mean, top against a loose, aggressive player. We've shown aggression, and you know, there's hands to protect against too here. I mean, there could be a draw there that he could easily have 6-7. Those are the types of hands that they play, or he could have two clubs. So I don't fault the call here at all. I think that he could have been a semi-bluff on his part or whatever, too. So don't disagree at all with calling at all, and just too bad that we didn't improve.
Okay, so several weeks ago, one of our listeners, Brad Jackson, emailed us to ask us what five people we would play poker with if we could. It's a question that he and his friends have been batting back and forth. And, well, you know, when you host the longest running poker cast on the planet, you have to squeeze the last drop of blood out of every turn of history. So we merely can't just discuss this in the show. We have to turn it into an entire show.
Exactly.
So, of course, we asked all of you out there, who would you invite? We also solicited suggestions on Facebook and Twitter. Got an amazing amount of feedback on this one, I think, buddy. A lot of good emails, a lot of good comments on the Facebook page. And... here's the thing. We'd love to read everybody's list, complete list here, but you know, we got the ship on Saturday, and we would be jumping on jumping on the deck last minute, like from Weekend at Bernie's, if we did that. So what we're gonna do here is I picked out a couple folks that had very cohesive lists, you know, where they threaded them all together, right?
Yeah.
That I thought were really good, and we'll read those, and then. Pretty much everybody else that I think that suggested something, I at least picked out one interesting name, so we can at least consider that. And then, of course, at the end, you and I are going to reveal our list, which we have not discussed with each other.
No.
At all.
No.
We've been sequestered from each other all week.
One of the things that I really like about this topic is, like you said, so many people contributed lists for that, for us to know, and it sort of reinvigorates us. You know, it's like sometimes you wonder, is anybody out there, you know? Who's listening? And then, boom, you get all these emails from all these different people from all over the world and their interpretation and who they'd want to play with. And you get this sort of insight into your listeners, too, what type of people they are. And it was really kind of cool. Every time one would pop in, I really cherished reading them. And I was telling Scott before the show, you know, when we were getting them, I didn't want to read them too carefully because I really want to just enjoy this show this week and just really soak up everything that they're saying. And a lot of our listeners are pretty damn funny.
Absolutely.
They should have their own damn show. I would probably listen to some of these guys, I think.
Well, you know, the real advantage to what this show showed me is that we essentially don't have to do a darn thing ever again.
No.
We just need to put a question out there, let our and just ride on the backs of our listeners. all right, well, let's get this party started here with the guy that got us started in the first place, Brad Jackson. You know, he sent us a list with a couple great ideas that we talked about on the first show about a month ago when we first mentioned it. Of course, we changed the rules on him, right?
Yeah.
We said, you know, hey, well, you know, you don't need to be limiting this to a certain amount of people. This can be living or dead. It can be fictional or not. We don't care. The show's better. Just tell us the five people or things that you want to play against. So he had to adjust his list based on our new criteria. So here's a couple of the ones that he would have added. Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka. Says he's my favorite character growing up. He's sort of creepy, but that might make the game more interesting.
And, you know, he's probably betting with candy, so.
Absolutely. He's perfect for my one Skittle, two Skittle game.
Yeah, I'll raise you a Wonka bar. And this one has the golden ticket.
We said H. John Benjamin, the voice of Sterling Archer from Archer, and Coach John McQuirk from Home Movies. Hearing him get in the hand of poker will be priceless. He's also a funny guy. Do you watch The Archer?
Well, here's the deal. I watch Family Guy, and he does a lot of voices on there, including the guy who owns the Quickie Mart or whatever you call it. The I guess it's... the Quahog Mini Mart is what it's called,
yeah,
whatever. So I used to know him as that voice, and then when I heard Archer speaking in these commercials, I'm like, hey, that's the same voice.
That's the Quahog Mini Mart guy.
Yeah, so I actually don't watch Archer, but it looks like it's probably pretty damn funny. I just don't have time.
It's absolutely funny. In fact, actually, a couple of the other people that submitted actually wanted Archer at their table.
And then Brad also mentioned Claude Monet. See, wow. don't tell you our poker players are not cultured people.
Wow.
I said Claude was an avid gambler and actually used his winnings to quit his job as a messenger in order to focus on painting.
He's the one who had syphilis, right?
That I don't know. I do know he had both of his ears, though.
I know it's Manet and Monet. That's that line from Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
But pretty good and well-rounded.
Yeah. All right, so here's our next list from Rick Danford. He's actually one of the guys that I chopped the tournament with this week.
Yeah, Rick Danford. That's our buddy from the Nuts Poker League.
Yeah, owns the Nuts Poker League here in
Big fan of Annie Up. Contributor to the magazine every once in a while, and all-around great guy.
He did a list taking some of the great fictional poker players combined with some of the greatest real players.
Okay.
Very interesting. He wants Brett Maverick, the James Garner version.
Yeah.
Eric Stoner from the Cincinnati Kid.
Now, which one was Eric Stoner?
That I don't know. Don't ask me that.
Oh, man.
But there's nobody in Cincinnati Kid I wouldn't want to play poker with.
That's true. That's true.
Mike McDermott from Rounders. Cliché! and Tom Dwan and Phil Ivey.
Interesting. Interesting.
That is going to be a game that I guarantee you, even as good of a player as Rick is, he's going to go home broken.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last time I played against Rick, it was one of his tournaments, and I won 3 bounties, including knocking him out twice because it was a rebuy. I knocked him out once and knocked him out again. So if I can do that, he's going to have some trouble against this fivesome. So, but hey, it's not about winning. It's about your dream. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, lots of different criteria here. all right, so Ivan...
Ivan Nizgaki.
Nizgaki. Gosh, what an awesome name.
So I like this one. This one, his last one had me cracking up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of good humor here. So he starts off with Phil Hummius Jr. Tilting him. Looks like so much fun. Yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah, I guess.
Now it gets better, though. Doc Holliday. How can you pass up the chance to use the line, I'm your Huckleberry? Calling is all in. And he said this would work with Huck Seed, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very nice. Wild Bill Hickok, he showed up on a lot of lists, and he said if he gets really nervous and starts looking over his shoulder, I know he's holding aces and eights. Talk about a dead tell. This is what I laughed about, although the next one was pretty funny too. But Lando Calrissian,
yep.
Prior, of course, to losing his Millennium Falcon to Han Solo, who wouldn't want a chance to win the Millennium Falcon? She made the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs. I guess you could also play Han for the Falcon, too, but he's clearly a better card player than Lando.
Yeah, and you know, Han will have a gun under the table and probably shoot you. So.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But that's
he's probably going to be firing a well on Bill Hickok, so you just got to
And of course, my favorite one, Pinocchio. Another obvious tell. Just have to make sure it's not on that island from the movie. I don't want to be turned into a donkey. Though people I play against may say that happened a long time ago. That is a great one. Man, that's just a great one.
Oh, great list, Ivan.
Okay, we got one from Adam Talley. This is a very interesting list.
Yeah, very... people from all over on this one.
Paris Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
I assume when she sees the card, she'll actually say, that's hot. And we'll know she has a good hand. I really don't know. Darth Vader, who clearly has a breathing tell.
Yes.
Chris Farley, who apparently plays heads up in a van down by the river.
Yeah, I considered him for my list. So.
Peter Griffin, who has that awesome poker face. You could never read him. And then he said, some random uneducated oil tycoon, obviously to fund the game.
Yeah, see, I mean, he hit everything here. He hit fantasy with Darth Vader. He hit comedy with Chris and Peter. He's got an attractive woman with Paris, and then he's got a
guy bringing the money.
Daddy,
yeah, he's got a guy
Absolutely.
Bringing the money. Make sure the game.
Yeah, we're
lasts.
Really well thought out. All right, okay, this is my favorite list, and it comes from Mark Whitting, and he says first he describes the game.
Yeah,
the level of detail that some of these people go into. I love it. Six-handed game, and because the last podcast was on 5-card draw, that's what the game will be.
Cool.
All right. He's going to use his nice decks of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Annie Up, and his homemade table. The game is going to play take place in the Cashmere Lizard Bar and Casino, the name of his man cave. All right, here's who's going to be invited to play. Allie Mills, a.k.a. Elizabeth Shue from The Karate Kid.
All right.
Samantha Maselli, a.k.a. Alyssa Milano from Who's the Boss.
Oh, wait a minute. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
So far, both these girls are in high school.
Hey, ride the rush here.
Okay.
You'll see the end here.
All right.
The Noxzema girl, a.k.a. Rebecca Gayheart from the Noxzema face cleanser commercial.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but okay.
Winnie Cooper, a.k.a. Danica McKellar from the Wonder Years.
Okay.
And Joey Potter, a.k.a. Katie Holmes from Dawson's Creek.
Okay.
And, of course, the sixth person will be, of course, Mark, right?
Right.
And he says, the game, Chris, is going to be strip poker.
Oh, man.
He said, yes, all my boyhood crushes in my man cave for some strip poker. If they could dress up like they were in their TV and movies, I would become the envy of all my middle school, high school classmates. Oh, this would be a rebuy just for me.
All right, so I wanted to make sure that, you know, he didn't want the actual Samantha Mastelli from Who's the Boss and the actual Allie Mills.
He wanted to dress up like Samantha Mastelli.
All right, so that's cool. So
yeah, so don't be calling Dayline on Mark here, all right?
Hi, I'm Chris.
He's just a boy with a dream.
Do you know why we're talking to you today? You're on an internet poker cast show saying that you wanted to play poker with young girls. But it was just fantasy. Very good, very good. All right, Robert Kelly, that's a political one, sends in, says, Richard Nixon, President Barack Obama, Jerry Springer, mm-hmm. who was mayor of Cincinnati or something, right?
That's correct, he was.
George Carlin, who was considered a very political type of comedian.
Yep.
And President James Madison. Says political figures who know something about bluffing, political commentating, and satire, and some real discussion about liberty and the intentions of the founders. Well, that's a nice little conversation. So it all depends. Some guys want to get aroused by the poker. Yeah. Some guys want to have their intellect stimulated. So right. There you go. Nice little pairing there.
Everybody's got a little something. All right, Rob Paul Chapman, a.k.a. Northern Soul from the forum. He's been very active on the forums lately, so we appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got to, like, change the rules for themselves, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to let Rob do this because it's pretty funny. Here's the worst five opponents. He sent a list with opponents he wouldn't want to play against. But I think this is more interesting. The worst five opponents to have in your poker game. The first is the Queen. Remember, he's from England here, right?
So right,
very,
right.
Very English-specific here. The Queen makes any flush a royal flush by definition, thus substantially improving her hand equity. Can you imagine them looking over at Elizabeth and going, yeah, I got a flush. But you know what?
It's royal.
Debbie Harry, I think you'd find the constant insistence that I need to call her psychologically unsettling. She can't have the nuts every time, can she, surely? Yeah, she seems very keen that we should call her any time. Best avoid it. My absolute favorite here, too. Fred Goodwin, he's the former CEO of Royal Bank of Scotland, or for a more U.S.-centric version, Dick Fold, former CEO of Lehman Brothers. We all know they like to bluff, but the numbers wouldn't quite add up. They'd look at their 1,000 ships, then arrange a credit default swap on the 2,000 ships, which, with their AAA rating, would indefinitely improve the dividend on the 4,000 chips, which means that they'll be able to bundle up the 8,000 chips into a package comprised of the original 16,000 chips, and then pay themselves a bonus on the returns yielded from the 32,000 chips, underwritten by the speculative market value of the initial 64,000 chips. Then once the bonus is cleared from the 128,000 chips, they'll declare your chips are now completely worthless, repossess the table as it was a secured asset, and somehow walk away with a massive payoff without having actually played a hand.
Oh, my God. I think that is more thinking that someone has done for a segment on this show than we've put in 7 years, man. Good Lord.
Oh, my God, that's great. And then it goes on. Pete Townsend won't get fooled again, apparently, which will be frustrating after a while unless you get very lucky with the cards. And whoever was playing Wild Bill Hickok in the number 10 saloon on August 2nd, 1876, normally a player going full tilt is good news, but one can take it too far.
Oh, man. All right, well, we boiled down some other ones real quick before we get to our own lists. This comes from Dan Banks. He says he'd like to play with Jesus. Since he is all-knowing, I'd probably not get into many big pods with him. My EV would come from cross-booking against the other players when they tilt after getting soul red. Very nice.
Our Southern Indiana Ambassador R.C. Thorne says myself.
He'd like to play against himself?
Yeah, see, you know, our ambassadors are not lacking in ego.
Because then he knows how he'll play, so he perfectly knows what he'd be doing in this situation. So, pretty smart. Okay, David Smith of Lafayette, Colorado says, I thought of many authors who were players and have written about, and the first being Samuel Clemens, otherwise known as Mark Twain. He was an interesting character who wrote some unbelievable stories, some of which included quite a bit of poker playing and other gambling. I would also want someone from this earlier era of poker.
Yeah, very good. I'm actually surprised more people didn't say Mark Twain. Christopher Grimm, he had his list, but he actually added Shauna Hyatt as the commentator.
I might as well go with the original. Jason Manibog said, any five people who I can clean out. How's that for an answer?
Greedy. He's looking for an answer, right?
I guess. Anyway, it could have been rhetorical. I don't know.
Alan Shiras, a good friend from down Key West, he says, Vanessa Selps and Jason Somerville, both openly gay pros at the same table.
That's right. Brenda Maury says, Ferris Bueller and Indiana Jones.
And then John Somsky, our Minnesota ambassador, who is more affectionately known as Poker Geek on the forums, his little list ended with, and for a bonus, Chris Cosenza.
Yes. That's right. It should be a dream for all of you to have me at the table because I am the guy who brings the money and loses. So, you know, it's funny because I reminded him last night on Twitter that he owes me $100 and he said he gave it to you to give to me. And I said, so Scott hasn't given it to me. He said he didn't get any money from you. Is he lying? So what he ended up doing was taking a picture of a $100 bill and sending me an image on Twitter.
Awesome. You know, so, my wife did that for with her dad. We bet on the a football game this year, $10. And she went and printed out pictures of Bucks. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, an Ohio State player. Printed them out. I thought it was pretty ingenious.
So I think we should probably stick with the theme and have us read all of our players each. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
It does not matter. Let me go first because you were very proud of your list. Not that I'm proud of mine, but...
And also, you're the laugher of the two of us, so you'll keep the... You'll keep the laughs going for me while I'm reading mine, so because you'll laugh at anything. So
that's true.
All right, you go first.
All right, here's the thing. I share the same criteria that Poker Geek used in his list. Just like in the home game, I'm there for more about the interesting conversations in the poker. To me, the poker's a side thing.
Okay. So
when you guys all come over to the house, I just like having you guys all over and chatting with the guys.
Okay.
So for me, I really want interesting people there, not so much poker players necessarily.
Okay.
But at the same time, I'm not at all interested in teaching a Poker 101 course here.
Right.
So I at least want folks who can play the game, all right?
Yep.
So I kind of approached this like a dinner party. I want to pick a group that works well together. So that meant I had to kick a few people out that I think might be more interesting on their own, but just didn't gel with my overall group. All right?
Okay.
I was very intrigued about using fictional characters. But in the end, I decided there's just so many interesting real people out there that it would be kind of a waste to not go through all real people.
Okay.
All my people are real. I did consider some people who are still alive, but hey, there's still a chance I might play with them, so I'm not going to waste my dream here on them. I'm going to pick all people that are dead.
Okay.
It goes without saying, but I will say it anyhow, if this was actually a real thing, if a genie washed up in a bottle on the stand when my space shuttle fell into the island...
You're going a long way for this joke, man. If you had one wish, how's that?
Absolutely, I would go with people that I know who are no longer with us and I miss very much, especially my grandmother who taught me how to play, and of course John Lanier, who I still can't believe I'll never get to play cards with again.
Right.
But we know this isn't real, so we're going to have fun here, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to start my list off with Frank Sinatra.
Huh.
Figure he can talk about music, Vegas, movies, Kennedys, and broads.
Broads.
His work, not mine. So, you know, he can talk about everything. It's very interesting.
That's true. Okay, very good. And he's also one of the Ocean's 11, so you know he's got the game.
That's true. Very true. All right, next one. Arnold Rothstein.
Yeah, the guy who fixed the World Series.
Well, allegedly.
Oh, please.
I am an absolute, I soak up all mob history. I love it. And of course, most mobsters are gamblers too, so, you know, I had to have at least one on my list, right? Kind of considered Al Capone, Bugsy Siegel, Meyer Lansky, John Gotti, But in the end, I decided to go with Rothstein, since he could talk about sports, the Black Sox, allegedly. And also, he was probably the best businessman of all those people. And certainly, you know, we run a business. I like to talk to the business, even if it is illegal business.
Well, you know, and also, he was the hero of Hyman Roth, so that'll spark some conversation there, too.
Plus, you know, you'll notice as I go through here, I've kind of got different eras, too, that I think are important. So,
okay.
So Frank is kind of my 50s, 60s guy, and Arnold's my 20s guy, right?
Okay.
All right, George Carlin, he showed up on a lot of lists, actually. But you have to have somebody that's going to bring the laughs.
Yeah.
Poker game without laughter is no fun, right?
Yep, yep.
I did give serious thought to Chris Farley, who made me laugh in even the worst of his movies. But Carlin's a much better choice here because of his political commentary he can offer. Plus, it would assure for the first time, Chris, that I don't have the saltiest mouth in the home game.
I can make it salty if you want. I just, you know, playing to the crowd, you know.
Oh, man. All right. Then my next one will be Andrew Jackson.
Oh. Because he's literally the face of money?
Don't steal my joke yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the only thing I'm a bigger buff at than mob history is presidential history. So I absolutely have to have a president play. I consider Thomas Jefferson, Abe Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt. But I need some disparity in eras here, as I mentioned. So, you know, this gets me back into the 1800s, right? And no doubt Jackson can play some cards. The guy was a wild dude, man. I don't know if you know this, but when he was inaugurated, he just invited everybody to come over to the Wild House like one big kegger.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude, wow. It was fun. And, of course, you know, if we're playing with cash rather than chips, he can bet a $20 bill and say, quote, I raised a me.
Oh, man.
And then the final person on my list, Stu Unger.
Uh-huh.
Poker list, so I got to have one real poker player on this list, right?
Right.
I have absolute mad admiration for Chip Reese, so strongly considered him. But Stu is just an incredibly interesting player. I just cannot not choose him. I would love to see how much of him is legend and how much is real. I think that's it. I mean, we've heard so much about this guy. We've seen the bad movies, and you know, we read the books, and I'm just curious how much of it is real and how much of it was Hollywooding.
Very cool. That is very good. And that was the thing about it, too, is I considered Unger very seriously for my list, too. My list is very similar in that I felt like I had to have a president and had somebody bring the laughs and that kind of thing. And I have more real people than not. But once somebody did throw that out there that it could be fictional, I had to have some fun with it. So,
sure.
My first one is Doyle Brunson. You know, you said that, you know, there's possibility that you could play with some of these guys who are still alive. I really don't think there's ever any chance that I'm going to sit across from Doyle Brunson. But I want to play Doyle Brunson, who, in his prime, back when he won back-to-back titles, and was correctly calling Johnny Moss down with Jack High. You know, I tend to like movies about geniuses or remarkable feats, you know, Good Will Hunting, Beautiful Mind, Matrix, that kind of stuff. So to see him in his prime would be a true honor to me. And if Phil Ivey wants to sit in while Doyle scoots into the little Doyle's room, I'm just fine with that.
Well, no, that's a good point. I was thinking about this last night. I mean, what would be the dream here is not to have a list of five for a home game, but to be in a multi-table tournament with as many people as you can pack in.
Yeah.
And be at the first break table. Some table breaks, and then you move to somebody else.
And that's kind of the theme here. I got Richard Nixon, but back when he was in the service, you know, they say he won his money for his political campaigning by beating guys, you know, in the barracks or on the ship or whatever the hell it was in poker. So I always just want to see just how good he really was. And if Harry Truman wants to sit in while Tricky Dick visits the Oval Office to pass the buck, I'd vote for that.
Very good. I was thinking about Harry Truman, too, because obviously he was a good player, or at least enjoyed playing. I just didn't think he'd be as an interesting president. So,
Teddy KGB, before he learns of his tell, I have to beat one of these guys at the table for some cash so I can stay in the game. And who better than a man with an insatiable sweet tooth, a cage full of chips, and an over-the-top Russian accent, and a rack full of tell-spewing Oreo cookies?
Awesome.
And if Joey Knish wants to sit in as Teddy vacates some borscht in the Sputnik closet, I'd say da. Now for the laughs, Benjamin Franklin Pierce. Now I know that you know, a lot of these names seem to be the same ones that were on my top five favorite players, and that kind of makes sense. But he'd bring the laughs. In the pre-BJ years, though, that was when nobody beat him at poker. I'd like to compare his poker prowess to the other really good player at the table. And, of course, laugh all night long at his never-ending wisecracks and masterful metaphors. And if Charles Emerson Winchester wants to sit in for him while Hawkeye has to go AWOL to the latrine, I'm all for it, as Charles has a whistling tell that makes KGB look like Joe Navarro.
To go to AWOL. That's very good.
And, of course, my final one is Wild Bill Hickok.
Mm-hmm.
On the same day he gets shot, so I could see if he actually was cheated or if he actually did have that good of a hand to see if he was really that good. Did he really have aces and eights? There seems to be some sort of thing that he didn't. And if Doc Holliday could take a break, from hacking up one of his lungs and wanted to relieve Wild Bill as he went to the outhouse, I'd be just fine with that because I wouldn't be the only one at the table accused of having tuberculosis.
It might be the first time.
So I essentially have a list of 10, but I have runner-ups for the 5, so...
Yeah. Well, hey, it's a very tough exercise.
But it's a pretty good table, though. Imagine sitting with those guys, your 5 or my 5, that'd be pretty wild.
Yeah.
Of course, we'd all be like, why are all these dead people and fake people sitting around us? That'd be hard to get past that for a while, but once you did, it'd be a great game.
All right, well, hey, Brad, we absolutely appreciate you sharing your crazy home game story with us. Obviously, we turned it into something much crazier than you thought, and it was a lot of fun. And, hey, keep these ideas coming, folks. So these kind of shows are kind of my favorite to do now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right to play!
All right, we got a situation.
All right.
From Everclark, he's been propping the show up the last couple months.
Uh-huh.
Our good friend out in St. Louis. let me kind of read through it here and jump in if you need to, but if not, we'll talk about the end of the situation here. He says he can't get his last hand out of his head. We've all been there. So basically, when I go back to break it down and do the math, I just want to know if you guys think I was on the right track and makes sense, or do I need to give up and take up knitting? Gosh, I really hope it's not that bad. I will say, when I played out this hand at the table, I thought about it very little and found it to be a very easy hand and never second-guessed my play. In the end, I just shook my head and went to the cage to collect my 15th place payday of $698. Obvious brag. The game was No Limit. It's a tournament, $355 buy-in. Week-long tournament used the World Series Poker Circuit event-type structure and payouts. 142 people signed up, top 15 spots payout, with over $11,000 for first. I stayed around the chipper average during the 9 hours I played. The bubble had just busted, and two tables with a total of 15 players remained. All right, so we're in the money, obviously.
Yeah.
I was very happy to make it in the money, and although short-stacked at $45,000 in chips, I was in no panic to make the play soon, as I was eyeballing first place, even though it would be an uphill battle. I like Everett. You should never, never panic with a short stack.
Right.
All right, here's the hand. It's 2,000, 4,000 with a 500 ante, and for the sake of the hand, let's just say 8 players are at my table.
Okay.
Because, he wasn't there and couldn't count, apparently.
Right.
It is the first hand to play after the Bubble Boy is gone, and I get 2 red kings, and I think to myself, I have been waiting for these guys all night. I've not had pocket kings once the whole tournament. Pot is $10,000 to start with, an under the gun, raises to $9,000, and folds it around to me. Now, being short stacked with this hand, I'm not going to push all in at once, but I know at some point all my chips are going in the middle. I raise from 1 off the button to $20,000, thus making the pot $39,000. Folds around to the villain who has plenty of chips and has me more than covered. Oops, boy, there's a lot of words here. So it's just me and him. All right, at first he questions if I even put in the correct raise and then goes into the tank. He eyeballs my stack and I tell him I have $25,000 behind. What is he thinking? The pot is $39,000 and it cost him another $11,000 to call. His pot odds are a little over 3.5 to 1. To just call. His blind odds of putting me all in drop him down to under 2 to 1. That's all the odds he has, and I put my raise in, hoping that he does call or raises me. There are no cards showing, so all he can do is put me on a range of hands. Does he think I'm making a play from position? I did just win a race with pocket twos and had to dodge a lot of outs. to win to take out a really short stack about three hands before. Do pot odds even matter at this stage of the game? I've committed a little over 40% of my stack, and I'll just get just over 3-1 on my money if he puts me all in. Should I have just shoved there? He just calls finally, and we see a flop of 9-5-4 rainbow. Now the call before the flop and the bet after the pot confuse me, and this is where I get hung up. He puts in a bet that cost me all my chips. I don't recall if it's 25K or all in. But I snap call because the flop does not scare me. I table my king of hearts, king of diamonds, and the villain flips over. Ace of diamonds, three of diamonds. Again, I think? He thought I had missed the flop and would fold. Dealer burns and turns to six. Someone mentions a two. A torpedo comes in the river and blows me out of the water in the tournament. It was a two, and I leave the table wondering how this guy got here playing that badly. I know it's not a bad beats, and poker is fickle, but I want to learn from this and keep wondering if I made all the right moves. I'd play this hand over again the same way. He had three outs and then added four more on the turn, seven total outs. Pocket kings win that 6 out of 7 times.
Whew. Wow. My first reaction definitely was, why didn't he just shove pre-flop? Now, I know that people, if you're playing heads up or something, and whatever, you might want to try to milk it or whatever, but you bet 40% of your stack on a re-raise, you're essentially pot committed anyway. And if you've got someone raising early on in the hand, like under the gun or wherever this guy was from, and you're re-raising with a short stack after the bubble burst, people are going to think, okay, you're just going with any two cards. It's going to be hard for them to fold the kind of money they're getting on their call. And if they don't call, which they may not, you've won a nice little tidy pot and can move on and have another at least one or two more rounds above water. So I feel like the not shove there was kind of weird. I mean, you got your maximum value. You got the guy to get all, you know, to call all your chips. But with so much money in the pot already, you want somebody calling your all-in preflop. And I don't see how somebody can get away from if they raised with an ace. And then you re-raise all in, and there was 10 to start. You've got your 40 in there. That's 50. He raised to 9, so there's 50, 9 in there? And, I mean, I just think that for him to call 30-something to win almost 60, it's 2-1 on his money. He's going to call, and he's got a lot of chips. He's going to call anyway, so why not just show a free flop? And then if he decides ace-3 isn't good enough and folds, then you got a nice little pot, and if not, you're only dodging three outs on that flop. So I just feel like that's where the mistake was not shoving. But I could be wrong. It could be just a call and then shove. Who knows? But the guy bet out anyway on the flop, so.
No, I agree. I think what I wrote back to him was I definitely would have shoved here. And I made it clear that it's not because I'm feeling desperate. but I do only have 11 big blinds left. With the Annies, it's even a little bit more precarious. There's 19,000 in the pot right now. If you shove and take this down, again, math's not my strong suit, but I think we increase our stack by a third. That's pretty phenomenal, I think, and then gives you some comfort here where you can make your next raise where you don't feel as if your stack has to get all in on the flop as it did here.
Yeah, it's actually almost a little less than 50%, because if you've got 19 and you in the pot and you've got 43 or whatever you said it was, it's almost half.
Yeah,
so you're looking at like 46% or something, 45%. So that's a huge increase on your stack. And then even if he does call, you got kings. You're only losing the one hand, and the odds are, you know, very rare that you're up against that. And even then, you could still win. So I just can't see not shoving there.
And that's all total. That I imagine his opponent kind of looked at his remaining stack and thought two things. One, why didn't this guy just shove? He's scared to go out on this hand. And two, this hand is the one that got to cost me 25K more. So on this weird flop, I think his right play was to put you all in as you did with any two cards. Yeah. Because it's plausible that his first question is valid and you're scared and might fold. And if not, he likely has some outs against you. So, I think the opponent played it well, at least on the flop.
I think so. I mean, when you think about the types of hands that our hero here has that just raises and doesn't shove, you know, unpaired cards do fall into that category. And if they're small pairs, he's probably shoving or calling. He's not just raising with, like, eights or something, so he wouldn't be afraid of that flop. So I think it's a good move to just put them all in for 25 more grand when there's that much out there.
You know, and I guess part of this too, in that tournament I played this week too, I think people don't realize, don't take enough, pay enough attention to the chip stacks and what it means to win just those blinds and annies.
Right.
And particularly in this tournament on Tuesday, when we were four-handed, I don't think anybody had more than 12 big blinds. So, and people were like limping into pots. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I would push almost all the time. Poor Rick, he would, he was in the small blind and just called me and I shoved and he folded. And then we made a joke about it. And then he was on the button and he limped and I was in the small blind and I shoved and the big blind he folded. And we made a joke about it. And what I wanted to tell him is, I'm going to keep shoving all night. It doesn't make, I don't know why you're committing, why you're just calling here with your chip stack. You know, put some pressure on someone.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like putting your chip stack in, then don't put any more money in because you don't have enough chips to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's clearly here. I mean, I think people get these ideas with King's Races, oh, this is the hand I'm waiting on. I need to get as much value out of it as possible, which is great. But in this situation, there's a lot of value just in the chips there.
Right. I mean, if he had just taken that pot down on a shove, that's at least 20,000. That 20,000 buys him two rounds, I think, because it's 10,000 almost a round. So, you know, you got two more whole full rounds before you're even back to where you started with that hand, you know, and then who knows what happened in those two rounds. So, it's conceivable that the guy would have folded the ace tray. And then even if you didn't, you know, you're a huge favorite there at 60-30, I guess, is what it would probably be, 63-37 or something like that. So, I think that's the one mistake. And then, you know, and then the other guy, I think the other guy probably, you know, was speculating. He's got a suited ace, got a huge chip stack. I don't really fault him for raising or calling, especially when it's just off the, but just off the bubble, though, you got to be a little careful. You know guys are going to be shoving. Last thing I want to do is call with an ace rag, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah. All right, well, Everett, we appreciate you sending in your situation of the week. And, of course, we've been loading you up with swag lately, so nothing for you this week, but everybody else, email your hands of the week to podcast@pms19.com, and we might send you something wonderful like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which has hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Andyup store at andyupstore.com.
One more shout-out to our listeners. Thanks for sending in topics and content. Always appreciated, and I thought it was a really good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.